what you're going to hear today is really a candid assessment of where our problems are in VA.
Alaska's VA system is making progress, but it still faces problems. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Friday, June 2nd. Good evening, I'm Zachariah Hughes. Also tonight, survivors remember the Japanese attack on Unalaska 75 years ago.
Continue moving forward in a positive way, our story never to be forgotten.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Today's broadcast of Alaska News Nightly is presented by
Arctic Wire Rope and Supply, now distributing Boss Industrial Log Splitters, stocking gas and electric up to 34 ton, on the web at arcticwirerope.com.
For the second time in 3 years, notices were mailed Thursday to thousands of state employees warning of potential layoffs if a budget is not finalized by July 1st, the start of the new fiscal year. Legislative leaders have said they do not want a government shutdown, but they also remain entrenched in positions staked out months ago for how best to address the deficit. While there's general agreement earnings from Alaska's oil wealth fund should be used to help pay for government, the Republican-led Senate and Democrat-led House majority coalitions disagree over what else is needed for a fiscal plan. Today, Governor Bill Walker weighed in on the legislative special session that has failed to resolve next year's budget or address the more than $3 billion gap between state revenues and expenses. Walker called a possible shutdown, quote, government shutdown, quote, unacceptable, and pledged to work on a compromise package to present to both bodies next week. This season's first major wildfire response is underway. The North Robertson Fire, about 30 miles northwest of Tok, is being fought from the air and on the ground. KUAC's Dan Bross reports.
The North Robertson Fire grew from just a few acres to 800 acres in less than a day. Alaska Division of Forestry spokesman Tim Mowry says the blaze started Thursday morning near a trail and is suspected to be human-caused. Mowry says flames moved quickly through Black Spruce Forest, a couple miles from the Alaska Highway, and the blaze was hit hard with airdrops.
Aggressive aerial assault right off the bat with a couple air tankers and a couple water scoopers. They were able to get a retardant line around the whole fire.
Mowry says that's allowed smoke jumpers aided by six ground crews to get in and start pinching off the fire and checking structures in the area.
Going out and trying to locate structures, assess them, what needs are for structure protection if it comes to that.
Mowry says wind has been pushing the fire toward the Robertson River away from the Alcan.
Traffic has not been impacted on the highway, both from the fire or smoke.
Mowry stresses that there is potential for more activity.
Really dry down in Tok and in Delta. They've had burn suspensions on almost daily for the last week, week and a half. There was an 80-degree temperature down in the Kenai yesterday, and things are really drying out, so we're thinking there's going to be some more fire activity around the state.
Mowry notes that this year's fire season in Alaska is ramping up weeks later than normal, and that state and federal firefighting agencies are fully geared up to respond. In Fairbanks, I'm Dan Bross.
Earlier this week, the head of the nation's Veterans Administration, Secretary David Shulkin, gave a press conference at the White House on the status of the nation's largest healthcare provider.
What you're going to hear today is really a candid assessment of where our problems are in VA.
What followed was a detailed outline of major problems that the VA is still facing, even after hasty reforms were enacted through sweeping legislation by Congress following a scandal over wait times in 2014. The VA in Alaska is not immune from those issues, but at a press conference today in Anchorage, one of the heads of the organization gave an update on where they've made progress and what work is left to do.
We have a lot of issues about care coordination. We have questions about how our internal operations work in customer service. And we have a lot of questions about benefits.
Dr. Timothy Ballard took over as the director of the VA's healthcare wing in Alaska 11 months ago. He highlighted where the state's VA system has regained ground in connecting veterans with primary and mental health care since the implementation of the CHOICE Act threw the in-state system into disarray. That includes reducing wait times for appointments to well below the national average, improving partnerships with private providers and military services, as well as working to improve staff morale. But echoing the tone set by Secretary Shulkin, Ballard was forthright about major problems that remain for Alaska's VA, many of them tied to actions and appropriations from Congress. And he cast doubt on whether the federal framework under the Choice Act can work at all within Alaska's unique healthcare system.
Because we are different in regards to healthcare availability, location, and the like, when you're trying to nationalize a program for choice, we end up on the outside looking in. And so hopefully we can make an impact on that, but that's been something I've been pushing in our town halls across the state with overwhelmingly positive response. Providers, veterans, our staff would all like to go back to the old way.
Ballard says that while his feedback has been well received, there is not yet any proposal for exempting Alaska's VA care from the federal system. Statewide, the VA is still about 200 positions below what the system needs to function optimally. The organization also continues to suffer from delayed reimbursements for travel and healthcare services, as well as ongoing confusion over billing and the referrals process. The state is proposing a nearly $400,000 fine for an Alaska Native corporation, Otna Inc., for safety violations at a gas well near Glen Allen. The Native corporation started drilling the exploration well last September, hoping to find natural gas to use as cheaper fuel for interior Alaska communities. The Alaska Oil and Gas Conservation Commission says the violations posed a serious and significant risk to public health and the environment. In an order sent last week, the commission charges that an oil and gas exploration company owned by Otna didn't install proper safety equipment. The commission also says the company stonewalled the agency's attempts to address the issues. Otna is challenging the fine. In a statement released yesterday, the corporation disputed parts of the commission's account. The company says it took immediate action to comply with the state's orders. In its statement, Otna said the project has an outstanding safety record, but also stated that it lacks the decades of experience that Alaska's major oil and gas producers have. 75 years ago, Japan bombed Unalaska, killing more than 40 Americans and triggering the evacuation of hundreds. In the aftermath, many Aleutian residents survived, but the number is dwindling as the decades pass. As KUCB's Laura Craigle reports, 43 veterans and evacuees are gathering in Unalaska this weekend to commemorate the events of World War II.
The attack on Dutch Harbor turned the Aleutian Islands into a war zone. While the military dug in and fought the Japanese, the region's native residents were forcibly evacuated by the U.S. government. Now, organizers say they've planned a commemoration that honors both halves of that painful history.
Being able to see the veterans and the evacuees come together, it's a long time in the making.
Janice Krukoff is on the planning committee. She says the two groups may have had different experiences of World War II, but marking the anniversary is really about one thing.
Continue moving forward in a positive way, our story never to be forgotten.
For Krukoff, that story is personal and urgent. Her parents were among the 881 Anungan people taken from their homes and sent to internment camps in southeast Alaska. They survived despite the crowded conditions and meager supplies, but not everyone was so fortunate. Krukoff says she's approaching this weekend as a chance to recognize the Anunga who died during the war and to learn from those still living today.
Majority of them are elderly now, so this may be the last hosting of something of this magnitude event.
Time is also passing quickly for veterans of the Aleutian campaign. Only 8 servicemen are making the trip to Unalaska, and historian Jeff Dickrell says that's far fewer than the last major anniversary.
For the 50th, there were probably 100 veterans.
This weekend, Dickrell will tell the story of the Japanese attack in detail with help from visiting vets. Their talk is just one part of a packed agenda that includes storytelling sessions, memorial services, and historic flyovers. Those won't feature the Japanese fighter planes that flew over Unalaska during the 50th anniversary. Dickrell says the sight was too intense for many who lived through the real thing.
Everybody just fell silent, and we all realized that it was kind of a cool history, but also you're replicating the deaths of Americans and war things.
This time around, pilots are sticking with North American military aircraft, an amphibious Grumman Goose, and a bright yellow T-6 Texan. The commemoration starts Friday and continues all weekend. In Unalaska, I'm Laura Craigle.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, the sale of a Ketchikan music store leaves behind a legacy of performers.
You see all these names of these kids that have been here years and they had these experiences, and some of them have gone on to do incredible things.
That is ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Alaska Pipeline Service Company, sustaining Alaska's pipeline for 40 years and counting.
The Early Honors Program at Alaska Pacific University delivers an experiential, individualized, and transformational education to high school seniors across Alaska. Find out more at alaskapacific.edu. This message sponsored by APU.
President Trump's decision to withdraw from the Paris Climate Accord drew muted reactions from Alaska officials on Thursday. U.S. Senator Lisa Murkowski told reporters she's agnostic on the Paris Accord itself, but she said she hopes the U.S. won't fall back in its efforts to address climate change, adding that Alaskans are already seeing the impacts. Governor Bill Walker released a statement highlighting the effects of climate change across the state, but he stopped short of criticizing President Trump's decision. In his statement, Walker said shrinking sea ice and coastal erosion are causing social and economic upheaval, adding that the communities of Shishmaref, Kivalina, and Nutak are literally washing into the ocean. And he noted that erosion and thawing permafrost will affect military installations across the state. Alaska hasn't seen any official statewide policy initiatives on climate change since an effort under former Governor Sarah Palin nearly a decade ago. The state was exempted from the Clean Power Plan, the Obama administration's hallmark climate policy under the Paris Agreement. But the Walker administration has indicated it hopes to advance some kind of climate policy later this year. Anchorage Mayor Ethan Berkowitz also released a statement following the news, saying the city will continue adapting and mitigating climate change. The mayor went on to write that the municipality stands with business leaders and other mayors from across the country. The Fairbanks City Council is starting over on a plan to demolish the deteriorating Polaris Hotel. The long vacant downtown high-rise and tallest building in the city is plagued by mold, asbestos, and other issues. KOAC's Robert Hannon has the details.
Anchorage developer Mark Marlowe owns the Polaris Hotel in Fairbanks, and he owes more than $50,000 in back taxes and fees. He had until the end of May to pay 2014's charges to avoid losing the building to foreclosure. Days before the deadline, he ponied up nearly $20,000 and forestalled city action. But Fairbanks Councilman David Pruse, who's spearheading efforts to demolish the former hotel, isn't impressed.
I'm going to get that building knocked down.
Pruse says Marlowe has put no money into the structure. He and the Polaris Building Work Group are pursuing funds to demolish the structure.
What my order is to go out and find $4 million, because that's what it's going to take to knock it down. I'm glad he paid his taxes, but that was neither here nor there with us.
The owner, Mark Marlowe, declined to speak for this story, but several residents want to restore and transform the building. Current council member Jerry Cleworth wants to see the financing.
A lot of people have ideas, but unfortunately, if you see the money on the table, nothing's going to come from that.
So for the time being, Cleworth has resigned. The building will continue to be an eyesore for the downtown community. In Fairbanks, I'm Robert Hannon.
For communities off the road system, it can be a hassle not only to ship products in, but also to deal with junk when it has served its purpose. A small community on the mouth of the Quijack River has tackled the issue on multiple fronts, as KDLG's Avery Lill reports.
Rural Alaskan villages aren't typically known for their recycling prowess, but for the village of Igiagig, it's a priority.
Currently, we recycle aluminum cans, plastics. We did a scrap metal backhaul last year. We crush our glass and we put it in our roads as a foundation for our roads. Pretty much anything you can recycle as far as compost, any household waste as far as moist stuff, food, we compost it for the greenhouse. We have chickens that eat scraps.
That's Stacy Hill, Indian General Assistance Program Coordinator and Environmental Director for the village. The funding that animates Igiagig's recycling program comes from a variety of sources. The village has been flying out cans with funding from Alaskans for Litter Prevention and Recycling since the nonprofit started in the 1980s. In 2010, it helped the organization pilot a program for flying out plastics. Now Igiagig is ALPAR's most recent recipient for the Outstanding Recycling Community Award. Last year, the Lake and Peninsula Borough provided the village $45,000 in matched funds to backhaul 55,000 pounds of scrap metal. Hill estimates that the village still has 15,000 pounds of scrap metal remaining. When area lodges start bringing guests in this summer, the village hopes to send out more of that scrap metal on empty backhaul flights. IGAP is another major source of funding for the village's recycling program.
That funds our landfill, that funds our interns. We have about five or six high school kids that work for IGAP during the year. And they basically, after school, they help with the recycling and separating all this material.
For this village of roughly 70 people, recycling is about more than being green. It's also a matter of keeping city costs down.
It would really fill up our landfill if we were to bury all that material. It would just fill up our landfill so quickly. It's about $3 to $5 million to produce another landfill of our size. And nobody has $3 to $5 million to replace what we've got now, so we might as well cherish what we have.
Next on the agenda, Igiagig is turning its attention to some oil-based paints that they have stored in their hangar. This year, they're applying for a hazardous waste grant that will allow them to dispose of the paint safely. In Dillingham, I'm Avery Lill.
Summer is fast approaching, which means Kodiak gardeners are looking forward to crops of kale and other hardy greens, but also fruit. The last few years of warm weather means that more apples and even pears have popped up around town. KMXT's Kayla DeRoche explains.
And my grandson,
yes,
is 12.
Customers catch up while the cashier rings up their purchases. It's hot and a little humid inside the nursery. The flowers have bloomed, the herbs are ready for fostering, and the vegetable plants come in many different, promising shades of green. And just through the door, back in the fresh air, a lady eyes a kiwi tree leaning against a wall.
And they stay alive outside.
Yep.
Linda Sudam says she's usually out fishing, but this year she's sticking around for the summer, so she's looking into growing fruit, like cherries.
Lonnie, I want to get that kiwi tree too.
And kiwis. Kodiak isn't typically famed for its fruit, but trees line the walls outside the nursery. White points out the bees flying around, busy pollinating the trees.
You can see all these flowering plants. There's a lot. We have a lot of cherries and plums here. I probably did more fruit trees this year than I have ever before.
He says they're also now selling pear trees, which locals have had luck with recently.
We've had such good weather in the spring and through the summer that it's provided the heat that's allowed people to successfully grow a lot more fruit than what we've seen in the past. So it's kind of a new phenomenon, actually.
He says good drainage, high-quality soil, and lots of sun are vital to establishing fruit trees. As far as vegetables go, White says the garden season has just begun and rhubarb is the first arrival. He says lettuce, kale, and chard will follow. But he says with the aid of greenhouses, kale, lettuce, cucumbers, zucchini, and soon enough tomato plants will be ready for harvest. I'm Kayla DeRoche.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by First National Bank Alaska. For nearly a century, First National has been Alaska's community bank. Learn how experience and local knowledge make the difference at fnbalaska.com. And by ConocoPhillips, investing in oil and gas production and creating economic opportunities for Alaskans. ConocoPhillips, Alaska's oil and gas company. Older Persons Action Group publishes Senior Voice, Alaska's only statewide publication for seniors, and is an excellent source of information for families and caregivers. SeniorVoiceAlaska.com. This message sponsored by OPAG.
Ketchikan,
Kotzebue,
Dillingham,
Sitka,
Chugiak,
Fairbanks,
Fort Yukon,
Wrangell,
Barrow, Unalaska, Dutch Harbor,
Alaknarechamut.
This is AK on Alaska News Nightly. I'm Dave Waldron. This week on AK, end of an era. McPherson Music has been the cornerstone of Ketchikan's music scene since the 1980s. But the shop has been more than just a store. The McPhersons have offered music lessons and led jazz and concert bands to help entertain the community through the cold, rainy winters. Now, McPherson Music is for sale. KRBD's Layla Carey talked with owner Roy McPherson and some Ketchikan musicians whose lives have been forever shaped by the store and the people who play a part in it.
McPherson Music survived the population decline after Ketchikan's pulp mill closed, multiple recessions, and competition from direct mail catalog companies. But the internet, with its promises of low prices and free shipping, was the final blow.
A little empty.
It is, isn't it?
Roy McPherson leads the way through the bare, echoey shop. Walls that once held hundreds of guitars on display are empty. The pianos, amps, speakers, and drum sets are gone.
This is that, you know, of course, it was all covered with photographs and things all down the hall. And This room was full of pictures of the various arts and things that have gone on. So, but we have to get it ready in case it goes because there's so much to move. You know? So. Do you do coffee?
The store hasn't sold yet, but Roy and Tina McPherson are prepared to vacate. They even have a spot ready in their home for a colorful mural by Ketchikan artist and musician David Rubin. The mural on the back wall depicts longtime members of various McPherson-led bands along with Roy himself. The bands, those are a huge part of McPherson Music. They started in the late 1990s when Roy, a former high school band teacher, and Tina, who plays trombone, decided to form a youth jazz band. Roy says that was Tina's idea, but the band picked the name Windjammers.
And we had about 32 kids sign up, I think, something like that.
And more kids wanted to join, so they started a second one. That became the Soundwaves, and soon both bands were full.
And then we said, well, let's start a class, and we'll call it Discovering Jazz Fundamentals. And we thought, well, we'll have a dozen kids, maybe, and we'll get them ready for the Soundwaves. 33 signed up.
Youth band enrollment later declined as the population of school kids dropped, so McPherson scaled back to just the Windjammers. They recruited adults to fill some holes in the band, and the kids grew up.
So now the Windjammers are all adults, and it's a red-hot band. There is not a weakness in that band. They can play anything, really anything.
A few days later, the Windjammers gather for a free concert at the store. Drummer Kim Kleinschmidt warms up before the performance. He worked at McPherson Music for decades and says the store gave him a second chance at a career in the music business.
I didn't complete my college degree in performance. And to come back and work with Roy, who was the finest educator I ever worked with, even including all the college career I had in Washington State.
Windjammers tenor sax and flute player Jamie Carlson is the music teacher at Schoenbar Middle School. She was a toddler when she first walked into McPherson Music.
I grew up in this store. I think I was coming in, my mom had us coming in when I was 2, you know, and so kind of coming in and growing up with them here has been awesome. But
Carlson says she's not sure she would have had the same career if McPherson Music hadn't been there for her. And she says it'll be a sad day when the store sells. Carlson points to some of the metal support poles in the shop covered with signatures.
You see all these names of these kids that have been here years and they had these experiences, and some of them have gone on to do incredible things, and some of them have passed away, and you know, we honor their memory, and it's just, this place has a lot of history in here, and it's...
Where's your name on the pole?
What was that?
Where's your name on the pole?
My name's up there at least 6 times, I think, because we got to sign it each year as we were in the band.
A good crowd shows up for the concert. McPherson leans against one of those poles covered with his students' names as he introduces the band and the Count Basie song they're about to play.
We used to pull this piece out every once in a while, see if the band was maturing. And they would beat us up, and we'd put it away. And next year, we'd pull it out again. We'd get a little closer. Now we just pull it out and read it and play it, because this band can do it.
The store might be for sale, but the band isn't going anywhere. McPherson plans to continue leading the Windjammers and his concert band, keeping that music magic alive. For AK, I'm Layla Carey.
Now it's time for 49 Voices. This week we're hearing from Frage Schaefer in Palmer. Schaefer is an electrician who grew up in Point Hope.
I moved out of Point Hope because it was getting a little bit too challenging
There was a lot of alcohol influence and drugs, and I was part of that too, but I didn't want my kids around it, my little kids, so moved down to Palmer. Right now they're probably whaling seal hunting. Next month it'll be walrus, and the next month it'll be gathering caribou, moose come along. It's always just a cycle, you know, you just gotta be ready for the next cycle. Oh, I whaled with my uncle, so I would help him repair the boat, patch up the boat, skin the boat, clean the whaling equipment, things like that. Fix the snow machines and get them ready. Most of the elders are passing away. They're like myself, I grew up with my grandparents, but I can't speak to the language. I didn't pay attention enough, so now my kids won't speak it, so it's just a cycle that's lost. Oh, when I was a boy, there was a muskox that was going wild. I don't know if it had rabies or porcupine quills in it or something. It was chasing everyone, and I was walking home from the store with the groceries in my hand, and I didn't see it. It was coming up pretty fast behind me, and someone grabbed my shirt and yanked me into their house, the door. Yeah, he just missed me. He was gonna ram me up. I was oblivious to what was going on. But yeah, only in Alaska you get chased down by a muskox with groceries in your hand.
Frade Schaefer lives in Palmer. 49 Voices is AK's attempt to put every Alaskan on the radio. Thanks for listening to AK this week. We had help from Layla Carey and Wesley Early. Tune in next week for more unique stories from around the state. I'm Dave Waldron.
That is all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. Tonight's stories can be found on our website, alaskapublic.org. You can like us on Facebook at Alaska Public Media and follow us on Twitter at APRN. Weird reports tonight from Rachel Waldholtz and Elizabeth Harbaugh in Anchorage, Dan Bross and Robert Hannon in Fairbanks, Laura Craigle in Unalaska, Kayla DeRoche in Kodiak, and Avery Lill in Dillingham. Our audio engineer is Dave Waldron. Sean Dugan is our editor and producer. Wesley Early is our web editor. And I am Zachariah Hughes. Have a great weekend.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible in part by your local public radio station. The Medallion Foundation and the Federal Aviation Administration provide information on passengers' rights and responsibilities. More information at faa.gov/go/flyalaska. This message is sponsored by the Medallion Foundation. Boating accidents happen, even to experienced boaters and on calm, sunny days. This boating season, make those you care about promise to be rescue ready by always wearing a life jacket when in an open boat or on deck, attaching the engine cutoff device when underway, and carrying emergency communication and distress signaling devices on their person. Visit pledgetolive.org for more. This message sponsored by the Alaska Office of Boating Safety. If you're a K-12 teacher, consider the University of Alaska Southeast Juneau campus for summer in the rainforest continuing education courses. Two sessions offered, Basic and Beyond Arts Institute, July 24th through 29th, and Indigenous Arts Institute, July 30th through August 4th. Stipends, scholarships, and on-campus housing are available. Learn more at uas.alaska.edu/summerrain. This message is sponsored by UAS.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.